Good morning, and again, we're pleased to be invited to the oral health community. In many ways, we're here as health disparity researchers, and I want to acknowledge my colleagues that you see here listed on the screen, and those in the audience, please raise your hand in case there are questions or barbs or slings and arrows. You can spread those around. And our topic here is taking action in emergency dental care and prevention of oral health disparities, a fourth generation health disparities research initiative. We began with a recognition of serious disparities in this country, one that we address from the perspective of health equity and social justice. I have nothing to disclose. And so we begin with the oral health problem as a wicked problem. What is a wicked problem? A wicked problem is a social or cultural problem that is difficult or impossible to solve for many reasons, including but not limited to incomplete contradictory knowledge, the number of people and multiple opinions involved, the large economic burden, and the fact that complex problems are typically offloaded to policymakers, are written off as too big and too cumbersome to solve. So in this field of oral health, there are numerous challenges, and I would submit that they fall into this bucket that we call wicked problems. In the state of Maryland, with the death of DeMonte Driver, and we didn't go into all those details here, we assume you know about DeMonte Driver, his death led to major legislation changes in the state of Maryland. And so children are covered in ways that are quite remarkable, but that does not extend to adults. So children and pregnant women have good coverage, adults not so good. And we're going to talk about the implications of that. Now, the wicked problem in oral health care. Growing evidence of a connection between oral health and comorbidities. So we're talking about oral health, but there is a growing body of knowledge that this is connected to issues of diabetes and cardiovascular disease. But we treat those things completely separately. People living at 40% of those below poverty level have one decayed tooth, but less than 20% of them have access to dental services. Many are under or uninsured, and there's a lack of safety net services. And these facts here, and particularly relate to the state of Maryland, there may be variation across the country. And the photo that you see there was taken one of the participants in the Mission of Mercy that I'm going to talk about today. But just looking at her in that photo, who's coming for oral health care, coming for emergency dental care, you can see the comorbidities that we're talking about. So the framework that we'd like to bring to the oral health community is how to think about health disparities. First generation health disparities research is simply documenting the problem. You know, that's our surveillance data. We do a lot of that. Second generation disparities research is explaining the reasons why. Well, now we know there's a relationship between poverty, and in this session we had today, a relationship with sexual orientation and even autism. Third generation disparities research are the randomized clinical trials that demonstrate what works. Unfortunately, many of those results live in our journals and our bookshelves, and few get to actually translate it into practice. And so in 2011, our team published in the Annual Review of Public Health toward a fourth generation of disparities research to achieve health equity. And in this fourth generation approach, we say it's time to take action on what we know and to take action in the context of race and the social determinants of health. And then to break out of our various silos to ultimately improve human health and to alleviate human suffering. And so it's in that context that this Mission of Mercy Emergency Dental Clinic has one response to the oral health crisis. Just so I can see in the audience, if you've ever heard of the Mission of Mercy, please raise your hand. So we have a little more than half of the room that's heard of this. It was first launched in Virginia in the year 2000. There are now 30-plus states, we believe, around the country that have these missions of mercy. They're organized by dental health professionals and local community partners. This is totally volunteer, what you're about to see and hear. Organized and operated with 100% volunteer providers and 100% of local monies being raised to make it happen. And as a result of our involvement, the dental professionals, dentists, hygienists, are also our most favorite health professionals, because it's quite amazing what they do. And at the same time, these missions of mercy have been tagged by the oral health community as just Band-Aid solutions. And that's kind of what we encountered. There were folks that said, we really don't like these things. They're kind of Band-Aid, and they don't really get at the whole problem. They don't address the root cause. And so here we were with this kind of a dilemma, a Band-Aid solution, and yet people were suffering. And so we again made the case, let's take a public health approach. Let's take a health disparities framework. And so in last year, in September, we launched a fourth generation health disparities research approach to the 2014 Mid-Maryland Mission of Mercy and Health Equity Festival. Now be mindful here that this was a collaboration with Catholic Charities, the Archdiocese of Washington, D.C. In many ways, we brought together the secular and the sacred. We brought together the silos that work separately and, in a sense, made them, created the space for them to work together. And that space ended up being the actual basketball arena at the University of Maryland in College Park. In the one slide there, you can see the line. That photo doesn't really give justice to the line. There were thousands of people in that line. They slept outside overnight. They were not buying tickets to the game or a concert. And then the other photo, you see the providers. This was a Friday and a Saturday with a setup and early screenings on a Thursday. Many of these providers closed their practices. So these are private practitioners. These are not students providing the actual care. I want to acknowledge the huge number of partners that came together to make this possible. And I think here is the other advantage of this kind of a program. No one can do it by themselves. So it required collaboration across so many different sectors. And as a result, we were extremely pleased to see what we could do in this amazing space here. And if the technology works, I'll try to take you in this space for just 60 seconds. So in many ways, that short piece is the flower of a lot of work that went in. And at some points, even those who thought this wasn't a good idea. But I want you to know what's possible when we set aside competition, when we come together to cooperate, to focus on alleviating human suffering. Just the logistics of it was an amazing feat. And we had the School of Business involved and organizational researchers involved that deal with logistics. And so this is the floor plan and the layout. And I don't have a pointer here, but in the yellow, you'll see how all the chairs were laid out. We went from oral surgery all the way, to cleanings. And this is just some of the basic information of who showed up. The majority were women. But we had, 520 or 51% were African American. You can see the breakdown of the other racial ethnic groups, including 23% that were Hispanic. The age range, again, a nice cross-section of ages from young adults to midlife to some elderly. And that photo that you see there is one example, simply the diversity of the people that showed up. These were not, in my opinion, the usual suspects. Then we looked at the zip codes from where people had come. They came from across the region. You'll see a high concentration right there in Prince George's County where we're located, but they came from across the region. And if we had some of the other maps, we can show that some people came from other states. Some people came from other states. Now, we raised, through donations, $150,000. And some of these donations were, you know, a $20,000 donation from a healthcare provider to a $10 donation from somebody who wanted to make a difference. And we took all comers. But what was most amazing with that $150,000 money raised to cover all the costs was $1.1 million worth of dental care provided. Now, dentists know, maybe better than others, but they definitely know how to cost out their procedures. So we're very confident in that number of care delivered. It also created the opportunity for interprofessional education. I think it is noteworthy that at the University of Maryland in College Park, we do not have a dental school. We do not have a medical school or a nursing school. Those schools are located in Baltimore. And in many ways, the fact that we didn't have those schools, those silos, people came together out of their buildings and came into this space that was created to serve the people. And in many ways, we did interprofessional education. 560 dentists, hygienists volunteered. We did qualitative interviews with a subset of them, and they said it was the camaraderie that was generated that was a motivating and powerful factor for them. We engaged the U.S. Public Health Service. We had public health community from state and local agencies, community-based organizations, and then our students from across multiple disciplines, including the Department of Music, were actually involved in creating the safe space, the dignity, the sense of respect that we wanted to give the participants. And we have a number of journalistic products that came out of this from the School of Journalism. We also wanted to, the wraparound services that we brought in to bear. The hospital systems brought their teams of cardiologists, diabetologists. We had the Cigna Corporation brought an entire mobile unit for primary care health screenings, and you can see a range of services that were provided to people while they were waiting for their number to be called to get their dental care. Now notice, they showed up for the dental care, but while they were there, they got the wraparound services that are associated with the comorbidities. And then the opportunity that we had to actually conduct research. We had IRB-approved research protocols that enabled us to do 52 semi-structured interviews with the dentists about their motivation for participating in this event, their perspectives on these moms events. Some of these dentists had been to every mom in the state of Maryland. It was their commitment. It was their mission. They would bring their staff with them. They would close their offices. 189 social science surveys, so we used iPads, and we interviewed individuals, as they're waiting for their number to be called, and many of them shared with us after the short interview that there was more they wanted to say. And so we were completely embraced by the community. They were so thankful for the service, and they wanted their story to be told. And the electronic medical record, the pro bono company that does electronic dental medical records, donated their infrastructure for the collection and the triage. And that enabled us to collect approximately a little over 1,000 electronic clinical records at intake. And so we're cleaning the data now and looking at the comorbidities, again, more on zip code, and the actual procedures that they received versus the procedures that in the triage the clinician said that they needed. And then the awareness and political and media outreach. I don't think we fully appreciated what would happen, but for those who are Catholic and maybe those who are not, you can appreciate if the Archbishop or the Archdiocese, if the Cardinal of the Archdiocese comes, that's a big deal. And we had the President of our university who came to witness what took place on our campus. The Maryland Congressional Delegation, both federal and state, were there, representatives from the National Institutes of Health, members of the College Park City Council, and Sirius XM Radio broadcast live from the event 4 hours. They took no telephone calls. It was interviews with leaders, clinicians, and participants. And as a result of that, the university's Office of Communications did an analysis of the media coverage, 196 total clips, 66 million impressions, 66 million eyeballs saw the story, and it generated the equivalent of $52,000 in publicity value. And I think here again, we had no idea that this would generate a buzz, so much of a buzz that during the actual event itself, we had to send out a tweet to the news agencies to say, no more stories, because people were literally clogging the roadways to get there. And they had to say that we were closed, we were not taking any more patients, and we turned 1,500 people away. Okay? 1,500 people were turned away. Just a summary of the news items, the local stories, and we ended up with national stories as well, including The Atlantic. The local stories in terms of themes are, you know, look at this great thing that the community has done to serve the people. That's kind of the basic frame as a positive story. But the national media took another angle. Like, why is this happening in America? And we're about 11 miles from the White House. Why is this happening in the United States? So the Atlantic Monthly did a long piece with photos, and then it was followed up in the Saturday Evening Post. And those figures are not fully calculated into the media coverage. So this is a story that opened up to us the fact that we need to partner with the dental community. We can turn these missions of mercy into strategies for enrolling people in other health promotion, disease prevention programs. And the opportunity is there, but the challenge is the fact that when the event was over and we broke the, put everything back in the vans and trucks, people were literally lost to follow up. There's no way of really following up with them. So our thoughts right now are to come up with a strategy where we would use the electronic record to actually enroll people in a database that they give us permission to actually then stay in touch with them and follow up with them, particularly as it relates to the other comorbidities that they're faced with. And so in closing, I'd say using fourth generation disparities research, we can transform a wicked problem into a winnable battle. And a winnable battle defined by the CDC means identifying priorities, priority strategies, defining clear targets, and working closely with our public health partners. We can make a significant progress in reducing health disparities and the overall health burden of these diseases and conditions. We should look for wicked problems and turn them into winnable battles. Thank you very much.
So we have 10 more minutes. I open the floor for questions. Yes.
I was curious, the small number of American Indians.
Can you repeat the question?
So the question was, a small number of American Indians, just as the health professionals were volunteer, but we have no idea who shows up. Now, this is the Mid-Maryland Mission of Mercy. For a state our size, which is relatively small, we actually have four of these occur in the state. Mid-Maryland Mission of Mercy, Southern Maryland Mission of Mercy, Eastern Shore. Now, on the Eastern Shore, which is more rural, we may pick up more Native Americans, and a Western Maryland Mission of Mercy that touches on Appalachia. So our work now, the success of this event led to the Dental Society saying, why don't you help manage the data stream from all of our moms? This data has been basically sitting there, and no one's really manipulated other than how many people showed up, how much money did we raise. And so now we're actually looking at more deeply some of the very issues you've raised. Please.
He can repeat the question, so please.
Scott Tomar, University of Florida College of Dentistry. We deal with some of these exact problems. But on the one hand, we feel good at the end of the day. We provided 900 extractions or whatever number restorations. What I fear from this, and I have these same conversations with my students that organize mission trips. What I hear from this is that they interpret this as the solution to a problem, not only the 1,100 people that got in the door, the 1,500 that couldn't get in the door, and then these are kind of sporadic. We provide a bolus of care without really addressing, as Dr. Varadian said in her editorial, we don't really get at the underlying issues. And one of my fears, particularly having policymakers come to this, for the photo op, is that this is interpreted as the solution, rather than doing that we've got such a crisis of a lack of meaningful policy that 3,000 people should have to line up outside a stadium on a weekend to get basic health services. And my fear is that while we think we're doing good, it might actually be working against a more sustainable and a more appropriate intervention for the problem.
So you have a nice, robust voice. So I'm hoping it got picked up, because I think that you're absolutely right. And so the question is, can you be absolutely right and we be right at the same time? And I think that's the dilemma that we face. And in fact, because it was so successful, we play right into that. I don't know what to do, but I do know this, that the people are suffering, and the people were so grateful. And this combination of that and the dental community, I mean, they did close their offices. They left with a sense of, I don't know what to call it. Some of them cried. I mean, this is like really, really deep. So what do we do in the midst of a broken system to alleviate human suffering? And I think the part of it is continuing the conversation. So you're absolutely right. This is not the long-term solution. But we got to do something.
Dr. Quinn? We may have time for three questions. Jane, did you have?
No.
Dr. Evan.
Okay. Real loud.
Yes.
Stephen, great to see you. I would concur with my colleague, Dr. Tomar, in terms of some of the concerns. But I have to commend what was done at Maryland as being, to date, the most comprehensive approach that I have heard about in terms of these missions of mercy. So my question is, have other moms projects contacted you in terms of replicating this model? Because most of the other models are rather monochromatic, and it's just thousands of people lining up, they go through a slot to get the dental care, and then they disperse into where. But at least your model, the model that you presented, I think holds some promise for at least expanding the platform and continuing the discussion and broadening some of those horizons. So are you being contacted for others to try to replicate this?
So the question, this was the most comprehensive in the other events that we've seen, that the so-called health and wellness is a table with some brochures. Yes, we have been contacted, and we were like overwhelmed with the contact. And so, again, all volunteer, all donations. We're trying right now to put a proposal in that would actually support some of the infrastructure that's required, because the logistics are pretty intensive. We don't have resources beyond what we did, but we showed what was possible. And so with your help, Dr. Evans and others, hopefully we can find resources to say, this is a potential model for moms around the country.
Scott?
Yeah, I guess I see value in this if it...
Say your name.
My name is Scott Preston. I guess I see value in these programs if they can be a springboard, similar to what Scott Tomar mentioned about policy action. So if one question I had is, I'm not exactly sure in Maryland whether Maryland expanded Medicaid under ACA and whether they cover adult dental benefits under Medicaid. And if they don't, whether you're using this to try to build momentum towards making that change in Medicaid.
So the answer is yes, we did expand, and the answer is that the other services still require some out-of-pocket costs that don't cover everything. And so what we did to try to stay out of trouble, we were invited into the oral health community, was they did not have consensus among themselves. So if the state dental society, if the national dental association, and the local practitioners can't agree, we could not figure out what the policy message was. And that's why we didn't have anything to push. We could have pushed, but we couldn't figure out where the community of oral health professionals agreed, because they were on both sides of the issue. Dr. Quinn, real loud.
I would say, in response to your concern, what we did do, though, was we're not showing you the media sort of coverage, the self-promotion. One of the things we did was we had talking points that our oral health professionals in the School of Public Health, Shonda Klein and Alice Horowitz, we had worked with them. We had talking points so that all the policymakers were assigned to one of us, senior people, sometimes it was Dushanka, sometimes it was Alice, or other subjects. We had talking points about what the issues were, what the issues, not thinking, you know, because there is an agreement, but that this is a band-aid approach, the policy gaps are these. And so that was something we were very cognizant of, and there's been follow-up in with the City Council and College Park about some of this. So it's not a solution, but we were very clear we didn't want to just be seen as given, even with its value, given the need, an activity that didn't make people further aware of what the policy issues are and what they have.
And so the news stories, even with the talking points, they still tell the story they want to tell. And so there were some hits, but there was also a recognition of issues at a kind of a federal level that are broken, that this represents. And what we're saying is that in the midst of a broken system, can we still do something to alleviate human suffering? That was our end. You may be the last one.
Yes.
Okay.
Real loud.
The question is there a chance that in the future you might be collect basic screening survey data that would just follow the basics of what the needs are? You have the procedures, but the whole idea of being able to track that at this site and at the other sites, just to be able to say, you know, what the actual needs are, and look at what some of the workforce or capacity needs are for community health centers or community-based health programs.
You've just described one of our specific aims and a proposal we're putting together right now to do just that. But the fact that we're having to write a proposal to do it is also part of the problem. Thank you very much.